Eurostep. Basket.
Hello and welcome to the Heat Check. My name is Wes Goldberg. Joining me on the line, fresh off of taking some shots on Snapchat, it's David Ramil.
You know, I can never match your level of enthusiasm. I'm starting to think that I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. I know I've been drinking heavily and all that.
It's because alcohol is a depressant.
Absolutely. I mean, as if I needed anything else to depress me at this point.
Oh, wow.
Setting the tone early, that's me.
You still... Don't tell me you're rewatching those Raptors Heat highlights again.
No, although, you know, that game 7, you know, things have just broken Miami's way. We could be the one tied 2-2 in the Cleveland series.
Sure could, or not, I don't know.
That's how it happens, right? I mean, if we had moved on, we would be the ones beating Cleveland.
According to Twitter, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Because Goran Dragic would have, you know, transformed into Kyle Lowry and Hassan Whiteside would have dominated. Nobody would have gotten those open looks from the perimeter with Whiteside out there. So that would have been all the difference.
That's it. I can't even bring myself to talk about that because I thought I had moved on. And this article that I want to talk with you about a little bit later, that excellent Pablo Torre piece about LeBron and Wade's relationship and how like they were texting each other before the game and talking about like how they've always wanted to play against each other, even though they played with each other. Got me really sad again. Then I was just kind of like down in the dumps. And I was just like, you know what? I really did want that. I thought I was grown up and I could move on, but no. So, and then I found my, I was cleaning out my closet the other day and found my Dwayne Wade Heat jersey that I haven't worn since the first Heat Spurs championship.
2013?
Yeah. And I was like, oh man, I should have been wearing this all playoffs. Things could have been so much different.
I had a three t-shirt rotation that I would wear during the playoffs during the Big Three era. One was a black Chris Bosh shirt, a red LeBron shirt, and a white Dwayne Wade shirt. And I would rotate those for every game. And then during the finals, I had a collared shirt that my parents gave me that had the NBA finals written on it for some reason. Like, I don't know why, but they gave it to me. And I wore those during the finals, but I haven't worn a single one since that.
You got real proper for the finals.
Right, yeah, you gotta get formaled up. You know what I'm saying?
Just like how ESPN and TNT changed their little score updater thingy, make it real fancy for the finals.
Yeah, we got cucumber sandwiches in the whole nine yards here. It's it's like a tea party up in here for the NBA finals. But yeah, I don't know. I look at the every once in a while I go into the closet and I'm like, oh yeah, those days are over.
So I'm glad, you know, we've never talked about that, but I'm not surprised that you're one of those people that have to wear the shirt in order for your team to win. Or that you do have a level of superstition or maybe used to.
Yeah. It went beyond that. I even used to have like the other two, I have an armoire in my room. I used to have the other two hanging during the game so that I'd know exactly where one was on the rotation. You know, I would just move them forward, do laundry, et cetera, and just... That's, yeah, absolutely not. Oh, the one time, I'll be honest with you, though, and I don't know if I've told you this, during that pivotal moment in Game 6, I actually went into the room and threw off the shirt with, you know, 45 seconds left in the game, convinced that we were going to lose.
Really?
And, yeah, I actually threw off the shirt, and then I'm thinking to myself, what the hell are you doing? You know, you gotta go back and go down with a sinking ship, although at that point I was convinced that San Antonio was going to win it. And then I go back out there, and they start mounting the run. And I was there for Ray Allen's last shot. But yeah, that was I almost missed the whole thing, man.
While we're confessing here, I got up and almost turned the TV off. I was just like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm done. The season's over. Everybody was in the stands. Fans were leaving, and I got up and turned away and walked out of the room. And I was like, no. I got to do this. And I went back in and watched the rest of the game. And, right. You know, I missed very little, if anything. But I had my moment. I had my breakdown moment.
Sure. I can't say for certain that I would have been locked out the way some fans were. But, I mean, because that's different. It's like it's easy for me to shut my TV off and just go to another part of the house. It's not like I didn't pay $100 to go see the game live in the AAA and then just decide – I'm gonna walk out of here, and
Right.
beat the traffic or anything like that.
Yeah, we're not as bad as those guys.
Yeah, screw them. They can go to hell.
They're not real fans.
Unless they're listening to this podcast, in which case, welcome and thank you for listening, tuning into the Heat Check podcast.
One final thought on that. 2012 finals, I wore my Dwayne Wade. It's the red jersey, which I still will go to my grave. Great, that's the best Heat jersey. They don't wear it enough. The all red.
Absolutely.
Followed by the white. I like the clean white, crisp white jersey. But I have the red Dwayne Wade jersey. I wore the same black undershirt underneath it for the
Ooh.
entire 2012 finals, for every game.
Washed in between, right? I mean,
Absolutely not. Nope.
oh,
Needed the stink of
wow.
victory.
You're that guy.
The
You're
same.
that guy.
I'm that guy. And even wore. Oh, the same shorts, the same pair of shoes, and the same hat. I wore the same outfit every game. And even worse, I watched the final game in a bar at an alehouse.
Ooh.
So I
By
was
yourself.
around other. No, I was with my girlfriend, but I was also around other people who definitely thought that I was stinky. So.
Wow. Are they still friends or did they decide to move on?
I haven't talked to them in years.
Just wonder why after that moment. I mean,
Wes
it's
is
not to
crazy. I don't
surprise
want to
me.
watch sports with him anymore.
Right. We should just turn this. We had a whole slew of topics we're going to break down, but we should just turn this into sad confessional moments of Heat fandom.
We should have taken call-ins.
Yeah. Golly, you're on the line. Tell us your sad moment in Heat fandom. Yeah, that would
All right,
have
I'll
been
work on some sound effects. Okay, no, but seriously, we do want to talk about some stuff because I guess even though that the Warriors and the Thunder are in the middle of a game, the Western Conference Finals, LeBron's Cavaliers and the Raptors are in the Eastern Conference Finals. We've got guys like Stephen A. Smith and Dan Le Batard at this point, a national sports media figure, talking about the Heat's free agency. So Miami is still relevant, and Stephen A. Smith said, and well, said is generous, yelled that basically he wants people to listen to him, that LeBron to the Heat is not over. It's not dead. That's not an era that is over. So he's, according to Stephen A. Smith, LeBron James has promised one championship for Cleveland. And if the Cavaliers were to win the championship this year, that would somehow release him from his duty to Cleveland, and he would be free to pursue any market, any team that he wanted to pursue, and win a championship anywhere he wanted to try to win a championship. And because of his great relationship with Dwayne Wade, that could very well be Miami, that could signal a return to South Beach for LeBron James. And I know Stephen A. Smith is considered, he's definitely a polarizing figure, but he's also considered pretty reliable if he's going to say stuff. And he was credited with, saying that LeBron was going to go to Miami before anybody else did back in 2010.
Right.
I still think this is a load of shit.
Yeah, I don't buy it. I mean, for one, you're right. It's hard to dismiss him completely because of what he did in 2010. I thought he was like a soothsayer or something like that. He was so spot on about it. I couldn't believe it. Like
Yeah.
when he made that prediction, it was days before Wade announced. And at this point, I think he
Well,
made that
glad you used
pronouncement.
that word, that prediction, right? Like, just
Right.
because he was right doesn't mean he was right. You know what I mean? Like,
Or that he had any inside information about what was going on.
correct, right? He could have just he could have been lucky. Like, we don't know.
Right. And he would have spun it anyway. Look, I mean, in following, Kevin Durant and the Thunder earlier this year, Stephen A. Smith made a whole lot of comments about Washington being an option, the Knicks being an option. He actually said that, and Durant was
Yeah.
seriously entertaining the Knicks. And then, like a couple months later, Kevin Durant is seriously considering the Lakers. So he's been considering a lot of teams, and chances are he'll probably re-sign in Oklahoma City. But, so we don't know for certain if it's a possibility. I sincerely doubt it too. I think it's wrong on a lot of levels. I think he I don't can't say that he made the mistake of leaving Cleveland the first time, but clearly there were some reparations to be made. I think he had to spend some time repairing his public image. And yeah, though we are a little salty or sour about it here in Miami, I think it's balanced out. A lot of people are happier seeing him in Cleveland than they were seeing him in Miami, even though those Heat teams were fantastic or whatever. But then there's a couple questions that stem from that. It's one, and I saw this on Twitter, would Riley even want LeBron James back? And then another question, why is it that we expect James to come to Miami, and why wouldn't we expect Wade to join his friend in Cleveland?
It's a very interesting question. If you look at the Heat and try to be objective as possible, it's kind of hard to see. You know, if you look at who the Heat are paying, they're paying Dragic. He's locked in. It looks like Whiteside's going to get locked in. We'll talk about that in a bit. Chris Bosh is locked in, for better or worse, right now. Wade's not the one that's locked in long term. The Heat don't necessarily need Wade to build around him. They don't. He's not locked into a contract. And if you look at all the pieces that don't fit together, I mean, you kind of like Wade's kind of the guy that doesn't really fit in all that. I mean, and that's what's so amazing, and that Wade has been able to be a glue guy and be able to adjust his game with all these other players throughout his career. And you've written about it wonderfully for FanSided, but it's we can't take for granted that. And the other thing with Wade and LeBron's relationship, this excellent Pablo Torre piece that talked about that relationship, I don't know, about how they played together and then they really enjoyed that, but then they were really, really looking forward to playing against each other. But there's clearly still a bond there. There's still a relationship there. But we also know that Wade has a relationship with Chris Bosh. So
sure. The article pointed out that being competitors doesn't remove the friendship from the way that they perceive each other. They're friends first and foremost. And friends at a very high level. Like, I mean, Torrey quoted, you know, Gabrielle Union and Savannah Brinson, you know, LeBron's wife, and you know, these, you know,
he knew Wade would like Seabass.
Right. That was a particularly telling story, right? A very, very keen insight that even Gabrielle does not have any kind of insight as to what she orders for Wade. She knows better. When they go out to a restaurant, if he's not there for some reason or she's meeting him there, she doesn't presume to order what he wants. LeBron is the only one who has carte blanche to go ahead and order something. And he ordered perfectly. He ordered sea bass, and she was like, what? He doesn't even like fish. And he showed up, and sure enough, he was like, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted. And apparently LeBron had turned him on to sea bass a couple weeks earlier, and so whatever. But it's an interesting insight there, and you know, clearly they're friends first and foremost, and so if they remain competitors for the rest of their respective careers, I don't think it'll damage that friendship any. You know, we've seen a similar piece last year or earlier this year, I want to say, by Howard Beck at Bleacher Report when he talked about the close-knit relationship between Carmelo Anthony and LeBron James. So yeah. I mean, LeBron has a lot of good friends in the league. Chris Ball is another one. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So clearly those four are very tight. It's a very tight-knit group. You know, obviously the banana boat is one thing, whatever. They've been together for years, you know, as friends, and they've played on respective different teams. It's fine. So I don't think there's any need to entertain the idea of LeBron coming here. If it happens, though, and that other question, does Riley want him back? Do the Heat fan base, would they accept him back?
I think the fan base would. I think if ink goes to paper and LeBron James is wearing a Heat uniform again, Heat fans are going to support the Heat. And if LeBron's a part of the Heat or not, they're going to support the team. So they'll turn back and they'll be grateful for LeBron. I think that's what would happen.
Look, I mean, the backlash in Cleveland in 2010 partly fueled the reason why I thought he would never re-sign there.
Right.
I thought it was just, I mean, based on that interaction. And in Miami, although they didn't react negatively, I'm guilty of that, as are you to some degree. I mean, it was maybe 10% as vitriolic as it was in Cleveland in 2010. So, I mean, I'm sure that they would be. Look, they were much more generous with him. There was no booing when he played here again in 2014. They had the little video montage. Mm-hmm. I think they recognized, look, they won titles here. Maybe that's the difference, is that, you know, Miami has been able to move forward pretty well and still achieve playoff success, especially this year, without LeBron, versus the 4 years of not even mediocrity, just absolute garbage in Cleveland without LeBron there. You know, I mean, and sure, it led to some great draft picks, or, you know, Kyrie Irving, Anthony Bennett, and Dion Waiters. Mm. Well, maybe, you know, maybe great's a little bit too extreme. But,
one good draft pick.
Hey, yeah, Dion Waiters. He's the best player in the NBA at this point, so.
One thing that's getting lost in the shuffle with all this LeBron to Miami talk, one of the reported reasons that LeBron, or rumored reasons, I should say, that LeBron wanted to leave was because he wasn't getting enough control in Miami, that he wanted to go to Cleveland where he felt he could have literal control over personnel and how the team was built. And even though he's said that he has nothing to do with that, that's long been a rumor, and I think at this point it's well believed that he does have some sort of control over what happens on that roster. He's not going to have that in Miami. He didn't have it when he left, and he's not going to have it again as long as Pat Riley is there. And even if Pat Riley leaves and Alonzo Mourning takes his job, I don't think whoever takes Pat Riley's position, if LeBron were ever to come back, would give up that power. And that's just not the way that the Heat do business. And I don't see LeBron James going back to Miami just so that he can chill with his homie Dwayne Wade. Like, that just doesn't make sense to me. Obviously, we've seen that LeBron will just go to Miami in the middle of the year and just ball with Dwayne Wade whenever he feels like it, just to practice with him. Like, he will do that. So I don't think that he's just going to go back to Miami just to hang out with his friends. He is just became, apparently, the first billionaire athlete or whatever, signed a billion-dollar deal, lifelong contract with Nike, right? Yeah. Like, he's a business guy. He structurally wants control over things. He's not going to have that ever in Miami. So that's why, for me, I just don't believe it. I think
it's Stephen A. Smith just talking.
Yeah.
I think I think all of his predictions, if you want to call them that, are just close enough in reality that you can convince yourself that they might happen, and not so far-fetched that you can dismiss them completely. But I think you've broken down a number of reasons as to why he wouldn't come down here. It's not necessary for him to do so. I think at this point, jumping around would certainly erode not just his Q rating and his popularity, but also just his overall legacy. He doesn't want to appear to be the guy who jumps to and from. It's a 4-year blip on a career that he's going to keep in Cleveland. And as long as he's able to, look, if he's able to bring the title there, I don't think you can overlook the frustration of the Cleveland fan base. I know a lot of Miami fans want to say, well, screw them. And that's fine. You're certainly entitled to that opinion. But, I mean, they've enjoyed so much heartbreak over the decades, from Cleveland Browns to the Indians to the
Ohio State Buckeyes, who've never won anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, and they haven't won actually. So they've enjoyed quite a bit of heartbreak there. So I mean, sure. If that championship, if they were able to secure a championship there, I think his legacy is intact. He can enjoy the rest of it. He's going to continue winning, but at least he can get that huge, gargantuan, citywide monkey off his back, and I think that's a big release for him.
Moving on from Stephen A. Smith to Dan Le Batard, another ESPN personality. Mm-hmm. Basically trying to decipher all this free agent talk that's going on. So at Pat Riley's end-of-season press conference, he mentioned that the Heat are going to go after a whale, but that also Hassan Whiteside's the quote-unquote number one priority for the team. So that's led to a lot of questions. Are the Heat out of the running for Durant? Are the Heat hitching their wagon, so to speak, to Hassan Whiteside? And Le Batard tried to break that down a little bit, I believe this morning on his radio show, saying that Pat Riley sees Hassan Whiteside as the guy that can lure a free agent, possibly because of his potential. At 26 years old, he's a young 7-footer with unlimited potential, seemingly, a huge ceiling. And he thinks that having him in place long term, that's something that players want to play around.
He called him a game changer. I mean, that's high praise from Pat Riley.
Right, true, a game changer. So maybe he views Hassan Whiteside as a long-term building block. We'll get to that in a minute. But that, and Le Batard says, having Whiteside in place will help attract that whale. Now, you and I, before this podcast started recording, talked a little bit about how that would even happen. Did the Heat have enough cap space to sign Whiteside, presumably re-sign Dwayne Wade, and land a quote-unquote whale? Who would that whale be? Is it Durant? Is it not Durant? What's going on? The Heat are not out of the running for Durant, because everybody still believes that they're going to get a meeting with Kevin Durant if he doesn't just re-sign immediately with Oklahoma City. So out of the running, I think is a little strong, but options are open, right?
Yeah. I mean, and he didn't say exactly how he would make these, how he would pursue these quote unquote whales. I mean, the label, the term whale, could apply to a number of players, although we tend to think of it mostly being in the superstar level. Kevin Durant, maybe, Al Horford fits that definition. And obviously Chris Bosh and his health, looms over any decision that the Heat make and any decision that potential free agents make. But having said that, I think they like the flexibility that they have this year in 2016, perhaps even more flexibility next season. We'll know exactly what's going on next offseason. We'll know exactly where Chris Bosh stands at that point in his career in a year. Is it possible that they could try to move a substantial amount of salary that's currently on the roster? And at this point, you're not going to be able to trade Chris Bosh because, his health and the cost of his contract. But you could move Josh McRoberts. That'll free up about $5 million in cap space. Could you potentially look to move Goran Dragic?
I think it's something that's worth speculating about. My only concern with moving Goran Dragic is that we know Eric Spoelstra wants to play fast. And I think if you look at the young players on this team, they will play well in that kind of system. Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, even Hassan Whiteside, I think, will play well in a picked-up pace. But, and Spoelstra wants to play fast, but then you look at Riley's comments at the end of the year, kind of challenging Dragic, saying, you're right. An $85 million player. We can't just... You need to thrive in any system, in any pace.
Right, so, you set the pace. It's not up to us, not up to you to kind of play to their pace. You set it, right. Something along those lines.
And that's kind of interesting when you think about, all right, we spent the entire last podcast talking about what this team's identity is going to be. We have no more answers. It just seems that the team's identity is going to be, we have good players. Those good players need to impose their will on the other team. And that didn't go their way these playoffs. And I question a team that's going to basically run with that next season. I don't know, man. I don't know. I look at Dragic, and if Spoelstra's going to have a say on how this roster's constructed, I think he wants Dragic. I think he likes playing at that faster pace.
Yeah. Clearly, look, well, you're looking to bring back Mena Udrip.
Yeah.
Probably. Right. I think Tyler Johnson fits into their free agency plans, and he'll obviously be a lot cheaper. Josh Richardson got a significant amount of time at point guard.
Yeah.
Can you turn the keys to the team over to Josh Richardson at this point?
It's a really
I feel like we talked
question.
About this before, but yeah. I don't remember. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting how Josh Richardson's, sort of Evolution. Rise to the scene as a rookie, yeah. as second round pick, almost makes, Goran Dragic look expendable, which is shocking because the team started with Mario Chalmers, right? They yes, left they got rid of Mario Chalmers, got Beno Udrih back or in return. He got injured for the season. And now we're thinking Tyler Johnson can and the team. There was Mike Ryan was infamously came out and said this team would be better with Tyler Johnson in the starting lineup than Goran Dragic. A lot of people believed that. A lot of people thought that. And then all of a sudden Josh Richardson post All-Star break says no, it's me, bruh, and just takes the reins. I still question Richardson's ability to run the pick and roll in the NBA because I thought right. there were a lot of problems with that. I do like him more as a 3-and-D shooter. I actually like him more as a 3 than a 1 in the NBA. But who's to say he can't develop into a point guard? Maybe that's what they do. Maybe with Dwayne Wade, you don't really need a prototypical point guard. Maybe with Dwayne Wade, you just need a 3-and-D guy. Maybe Josh Richardson is just that. Maybe he's just Mario Chalmers, but...
Any idea of speeding up the pace goes out the window then. If you turn the keys over to Wade or leave point. Them in his hand, I guess, and then clearly speeding up the pace isn't a priority. But, I think Richardson's comments after the season ended were that he was going to spend most of the summer working on his ball handling and things of that sort. So maybe he recognizes – that's always good to do anyway. But, maybe he recognizes that his future is going to be at the point or handling the ball a significant more amount than he did during his rookie season. So a lot of questions. Yeah. And I think we're going to explore even more. I think you wanted to talk about some other potential free agents. Aside from the whales out there, other guys that might be able to make an impact on this Heat roster.
Yeah, whales, no whales. When you look at the top free agents, it's Kevin Durant, it's Hassan Whiteside, LeBron.
Is it Whiteside?
What?
Is it Whiteside?
I think he's going to get max money. I think if you look at
who... Oh, but who isn't, though? I mean, look, I don't know. I'm not sure that I'm disagreeing with you necessarily. I'm just saying you can't say max money or the money that these guys are going to get determines whether or not they're superstars or not.
I think as far as... Well, that's a good point. But, you know, if we're talking about what the Heat can afford, I think you take guys like Durant off the table... You know, Andre Drummond is restricted free agent, so he might get some offers thrown his way. DeMar DeRozan has a player option. Mike Conley's unrestricted. Biombo. What's that?
Bismack Biyombo?
Bismack Biyombo might be, you know, better than Whiteside at this point. You know, Al Horford, Dwight Howard, I mean, could be considered a whale to some. Harrison Barnes is seemingly going to get money. I mean, all those players aside... Well, where do you think Whiteside ranks among all those guys?
It's an interesting question. I think, look, you know, if we're seeing anything in the Eastern Conference Finals is that clearly Kyle Lowry feels much more comfortable driving against Cleveland's defense than he did against Miami. And a lot of that is due to, you know, Josh Richardson not being out there and Kyrie Irving trying to guard him, or not guard him in this case. But, you know, clearly... Lowry was, I wouldn't say intimidated, but he was aware of Whiteside's presence around the rim. And so I think that's a huge benefit a big part of Miami's defense is having a guy who alters a number of shots, who you just simply don't take those shots because you know he's going to be there. It changes the defense around and helps Miami out considerably. So is he a game changer? Yeah. I'd say so. By that definition, yeah, he alters the way the offense plays, and I think he adds some things, you know, in Miami's offense that you could consider him a game changer. Now, you'd like him to be more consistent. You've talked about this for years, the next step in his development. I don't know that he necessarily took it this past year, although I guess you could say that he was more consistent, especially in the second half of the season, and that you felt his impact more tangibly than you did in the first half of the year. I'd say he is among the top five free agents out there. I think you have to put Durant, LeBron, Horford, Whiteside, and I'm probably missing a fifth. I can't think off the top of my head somebody who might be I think at this point you'd rather have Whiteside over a guy like Dwight Howard, even though Howard might be a good fit in certain teams, but I think Whiteside's certainly a better player at this point.
Yeah, I think DeMar DeRozan, Mike Conley, those are good guys. You're
right, sir.
I think Pat Riley mentioned, you mentioned game changer. He also said he wants Whiteside to carry the team. And it had me thinking, you know, what does a team, if you sign Whiteside to max, near max deal, or you're basically, you've already come out and said, you're our top priority.
Right.
We want you to carry the team. That's your next step. Regardless of how much he signs for, Riley's come out publicly and said that. What does a team carried by Hassan Whiteside look like? And to me, I automatically think back to those, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009 Magic teams built around Dwight Howard, four out, get Dwight Howard the ball with space in the middle, and just surround him with shooters. And that, to me, is how you build a team around a center, especially in this NBA. I mean, you look at what Stan Van Gundy is doing with Andre Drummond in Detroit. It's very similar. That's, you know, and that's why I wrote a piece for All You Can Heat about, you know, some under-the-radar free agents who might fit that, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I want to get your take about what does a team that's built around Hassan Whiteside look like, and do the Heat, as currently sort of constructed, even though we have a lot of people not under contract, does last year's Heat team start to reflect that? How much is it completely off? Like, what do you think?
No, I remember some language that Riley included in his press conference that's felt particularly vague, like, that it's not about the style so much as it is about the players. Maybe I'm totally misquoting him on that, but you know, that he felt like if you get the right players, then the system doesn't matter. And that seemed like he was somewhat out of touch. Like you can't just go in there, you know, waving these mottos or mantras from like the 40s or something like that. It's like you have to have the right players. You have to have guys that are willing to fit a system. It's one thing for you to issue these demands or requests of guys like Wade or Dragic or even LeBron 3 years ago, and you saw how well that worked out. And sometimes these Riley pressers, as much as he's beloved in South Florida, oftentimes you feel like he's somewhat out of touch, you know, like he's just saying these things and it's like, well, you need a little bit more, something, you need something a little bit more defined than just saying, you know, this is how we're going to play, et cetera. You need the players to back up that system. You need a clear vision. And I don't know that having Whiteside as your team center, you have to have the right type of players around him. And I don't think Miami has that. I don't think they had it last year. And I'm not sure if they're going to be able to get it this year, because you're definitely going to need to surround him with much more qualified, much more frequent shooters. Now, you know, there were some moments there where he was able to execute the pick and roll effectively with Dwayne Wade, although that wasn't nearly as effective in the playoffs. There was when defenses saw that more frequently, they collapsed a little bit more on Wade. You saw Wade having to take it over. He couldn't go to Whiteside as frequently as he did during the regular season. So I don't know, man. It's tough to say exactly how this team's going to look moving forward, and that's the question. You know, we want them to have more shooters. Yeah, Chris Bosh helps in that regard. But you and I talked about this last time too. When Bosh was there in the first half of the season, they didn't work smoothly together. In conjunction with him and Whiteside on the floor, that didn't look like a harmonious, you know, free flowing offense. It was not necessary. And you could say, well, they hadn't played much together. Sure, I get that. But you still want something that you want pieces that seem to fit well together almost right away, and that wasn't the case in the first half of the year.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Riley. I want to talk about that a little bit, about Pat Riley seeming a little out of touch, and it seems like he gets to this, you know, he doesn't talk to the media during the season really, and this end of the season presser is his chance to kind of get it off his chest,
right?
And now he's the infamous LeBron, you know, the press conference that drove LeBron away about having guts, whatever all that was, heat lifer, blah blah blah, these sports cliches that he throws out. And then, you know, you see him issuing a challenge to Whiteside, you're going to carry the team. You see him issuing a challenge to Goran Dragic, pace doesn't matter, you just be a good player. It just seems like he's challenging everybody, and if he believes that it's not about the system, about the players, then I'm very concerned, because we have a whole season saying that that's not true. You know, as good as that the Heat were this year, collectively the whole was not up to snuff to the sum of its parts. And, you know, by player by player down the line, I know that they were injured, but they were much better than the Hornets. Player by player down the line, they were much better than the Raptors, I would even say. And even if you just the Raptors were the second seed and the Heat were the third seed, but the gap wasn't tight. You know, it was a wide margin between those two teams during the regular season. So, you know, player by player, there wasn't really, if you look at just the five names, I don't know a lot of starting fives better than what Miami had this regular season, and it just never really clicked. And I always got the sense that it was just, you know, like a six-year-old soccer game where everybody's just running towards the ball and nobody's really doing anything to help each other out. And I don't want to discredit what the Heat did this year. I think, you know, they overcame a lot of adversity and stuff like that, but I also think that what we saw didn't work, and you can't just ask for players to step up when it's their turn. It's just not... You look at the way the Warriors and the Thunder and the Cavaliers are playing, and even the Raptors are playing right now, these last four teams that are in it, the Spurs, who won 67 games, it wasn't just people imposing their will on the game. It was, you know, one collective unit. And then just look back to the big three Miami Heat. It didn't work in 2010 because they just had three guys that were just supposed to dominate and take turns dominating. And if you could just take turns dominating, because everybody just dominates for a block of minutes through 48 minutes, we're good to go. But that's not the case. And then what did they do? They went out and got guys like Shane Battier, guys like Ray Allen, Chris Anderson, Birdman. I mean, guys that, you know, glued this thing together. They reformatted the whole system with Chris Bosh at the five to make sure that the pieces worked together. And then by the end of it, we had one of the most, you know, thrilling, beautiful basketball teams we've ever seen on a basketball court play together. I'm surprised that Riley's backtracked all the way back to this.
Yeah, he overlooked Rashard Lewis too, who was part of Stan Van Gundy's team in Orlando, and he was, you know, he didn't play a lot, but when he was in, he was much more effective than you would have thought at that point in his career. So yeah, he was a factor. I kind of want to take a step back there because, you know, I think in Miami, you're kind of, as a Miami Heat fan, you're kind of obligated to be a disciple of Pat Riley, and I don't want to. I don't want that to come across that we're being negative about him. And I think you and I both are fans of his, and we love what he's done and everything else like that. But there is a certain level of hero worship when it comes to Riley amongst the Heat fan base, like the Godfather and all this. And a lot of that might be deserved. And I think part of it goes back to when he first joined the team in 95, and he took a team that was, you know, amorphous and had no real identity. And there he was, the best coach in the biz, and he chose to come here. You know, he left the pursuit of titles in New York. He challenged, you know, Michael Jordan, and he came here to Miami to instill a new defensive-minded team. And he had Alonzo, and it was the beginning of the real era of Heat basketball here. So I think that's part of why he's as beloved as he is. But
He provides instant credibility to the organization. He
does. He
he
does.
gets he gets the org he gets the heat in the room with the best free agents available, and that's really all you can ask for. But I do, you know, it's been said that Eric Spoelstra is the one that wanted to play small ball, and Riley was originally against it. And I think Spoelstra's gained the perspective, and it's his time. He's modern. I mean, I love. There's been stories about Spoelstra and his preference for analytics, and just kind of he's a modern NBA coach. And if you can get him, if you allow him a say in how this roster is constructed, I'm not saying he doesn't, but I almost but by Riley's comments, it kind of seems like he just wants to sign the best players that'll fit under that Andy Ellsberg will get under the cap for him, and then Spoelstra's job and the player's job to figure it out. I think Spoelstra deserves at this point, if he doesn't already have it, a bigger say in how this roster is constructed.
Well, you say, you know, and it's funny you mention this because it's like that's part of the not necessarily the problem, but part of the issue, let's say. You say that he lends instant credibility to the franchise, but then he goes out and has these annual pressers, and it's like it's the exact opposite. It's like he completely shoots holes in that credibility. You know, it's not, oh, it's analytics. He dismisses it. He sounds like, you know, that meme of Grandpa Simpson, you know, angrily yelling at clouds. It's like, you know, you can't just shake your fist at analytics and make them go away. That's not how it works. And while they're not the end all be all, you know, solution to building a team, they're certainly a big part of it moving forward. They're part of it. And just saying you want the right players and it doesn't matter what system you have, well, that's not completely true. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. That sounds like the kind of things you'd hear from, you know, Byron Scott, and you already know about the criticism he endured over the last 2 years in Los Angeles. So it's a conundrum, right? And I've seen Riley in person. I've never really talked to him, and I've certainly never been in a room where, you know, I have his full attention and he's fully engaged and talking to me. So I imagine there must be some incredibly ridiculous magnetism going on there, right? Like the personality must be so large and powerful that you cannot help but be orbiting the sun of Riley when you're in a meeting with him. Because otherwise, I don't know how he can continue to get players to sign here and take less money the way he does. I
And he
mean,
throws the rings on the table, man.
even that has become so cliched, but god damn it worked, right? I mean, maybe we're exaggerating the hell of it, and maybe it had very little to do with Riley and more about just, you know, Bosch having the same agent as Dwayne Wade and LeBron wanting to play with his friend. Maybe that's all it was. But we've kind of built up this legend of Riley going, seven rings, take them, you know, that's it. This is what I've got. This is how you build things in Miami. But hell, he got LaMarcus Aldridge last year. You know, he's probably going to get Kevin Durant this year as far as a meeting anyway. Maybe there really is more black magic than we like to admit when it comes to Riley.
I think players respect him. Players respect the organization he's built, and I don't think there's the Heat are consistently one of the best ran organizations, top to bottom. And you got and that always you top to bottom has to start with Mickey Arison and Pat Riley. So I do want to give them credit. They are good. They've created a good company to work for. They've created a good work environment. People want to work there. Joe Johnson spurned the Cavaliers because he wanted to work for the Heat. He wanted to be part of that environment, and he's even said afterwards, "I've never seen an organization ran like this."
Right. He
That
learned
much
more here than he had in years in the league already, which is crazy at this point.
amazing. And you've got and that starts with Riley. I mean, he's the one that started that. And I've got to give him credit for it, but at the same time, maybe that's what he's really good at. That at this point, that's what he's really good at. Let Spoelstra have more control over how this roster is shaped and what the players he wants. Now, moving on from that, what does that mean? It means guys like Luol Deng and Joe Johnson, who are unrestricted free agents, maybe that means the end of the line for them. And that's hard because it's you look back on this last season, and they both certainly had their moments. Joe Johnson fewer because he wasn't with the team as long, but had his moments nonetheless. And it's kind of funny when you think about getting rid of them, it's hard. It kind of tugs on your heartstrings, like, no, but he was really good against Charlotte. Like, we really needed Joe Johnson in that last game, or whatever it might be. But that's just kind of the way that the Heat were built this year. Like I said, everybody just had their turn. It was one person after the other down the line. Like, oh, you're not going to dominate? Okay, your turn. You're not going to dominate? Okay. And eventually it falls to Joe Johnson, and he gets to dominate. Like, and he did at that at times. But then those are the memories that you remember. It's just ISO Joe playing really well as ISO Joe, but that's just not sustainable. So I think when you look at this team and if you look at the future of it, you want guys that maybe are a little bit younger, that could play a little bit faster, that could be glue pieces. And I've talked about this, and you've talked about this in the past. There's just too many guys right now that need the rock to be effective, and you've got to get more Shane Battier types, more even Ray Allen types towards the end of when he didn't need the ball to be effective. He was a decoy. He was great off the ball, you know, ball mover, creating space even without the ball. More guys like that to kind of, you know, get the wheels turning on this thing, as opposed to ball-centric guys that need the ball to be effective. So with that in mind, just a couple of guys I wanted to bring up. Jared Dudley, first and foremost, with the Washington Wizards this last year. He's got a little bit of a Battier vibe to him. I know he's tweeted out that he's too fat for the Heat or whatever, but, you know, I still think at the right price he comes. I think that was more of a joke. I don't know. But
it might have been. But yeah, but it's funny because you mentioned it to me, or you wrote about it this morning, and I was like, I was still convinced that, you know, he's still injury prone at this point, or that he's not necessarily going to be as effective. And then I looked him up, and sure enough, it's like that's a stigma maybe attached, and maybe my own ignorance, but he played 81 games, started 41 of them for Washington, and shot 42% from 3-point range. You're talking about building a team with defense and long-range shooting, and he certainly fits the bill. So he'd be a perfect addition here if he's willing to take a lower salary at this time, at this stage in his career.
And he's only 30, you know, only. Like, he's kind of, it feels like he's older than 30. He's been in the league for 9 years, but he's played with so many teams. But, right. You know, he played with Charlotte. He played with Phoenix, the Clippers. He was traded from the Clippers to Milwaukee in that really bad Doc Rivers trade.
And he worked out well there. I mean, played well
in Milwaukee, and then played well in Washington this past year. He's always been good. Like, he's always been fine. His Basketball Reference has him at 39.9% as a 3-point shooter for his career. So he's basically a 40% 3-point shooter at 2.6 attempts per game, and that was because he was basically not shooting threes for the first 3 years of his career. So ever since then, he's basically averaged at least about three attempts a game at 40%. Like, that's a really good shooter. He's the kind of guy that can just catch and shoot. He can play anywhere between the two and the four, just like Shane Battier could. You know, they don't have the LeBron James presence yet, according to Stephen A. Smith. But, you know, you could slide him over to the four in a small ball unit. I think
he compares
him with Justice Winslow.
That's where he says he's more comfortable at this point. I think on the, I want to say either was up either on the low post with Zach Lowe or on the JJ Redick podcast. One or the other that I heard, I remember him saying specifically that he's more comfortable at the four at this point.
That's similar to what Luol Deng said.
Yeah.
The difference between Dudley and Deng is Deng could price himself out. If the Heat can get Dudley for $6 million less, I kind of like that fit. And Deng's been known to, he wants to get to the rim. He wants to affect shots. I love me some Luol Deng. I love what he did this year. I mean, I've written it and I've said it. You can't find many players who step in for LeBron James and then step in for Chris Bosh and do it both of them pretty effectively. And that's basically what he did the last 2 years for the Heat. But it might be time to move on because he's still one of those guys who's not really catch and shoot, even though he kind of did that towards the end of the season. Especially in that Charlotte series. But unless he's got that shot going, and he's not the career three-point shooter that Dudley is, I still trust Dudley more. I don't know, man. Like, I kind of like that fit, and he's a little bit more versatile than Deng, I feel.
And they're similarly aged, right? Isn't Deng 30 as well?
I'm not sure.
I think he is. I think Deng is also 30, so I think... I think part of the question is which, yeah, okay, which one of them is more willing to come off the bench? You know, you'd have to think that it's Dudley, but he started half of, you know, Washington's games this year, so maybe he's comfortable coming off the bench if he has to. I don't know. Maybe it's less ego than it would be with Luol, but you know, at the same time, Deng, I remember specifically at the end of, you know, the 14-15 season, he's saying he didn't want to be a 3-point shooter, and yet that's exactly what he was called into doing, you know, this year for Miami. So he's although he says one thing, maybe it's hard for him to have made the adjustment, but he's still willing to do it. Yeah. And, you know, he flourished at the end
of the season. And that's the difference. Deng had to adjust to do it. That's already what Dudley is. But I don't want to spend a whole podcast on Jared Dudley. We can talk about other guys.
Sure. Sorry.
Irsan Ilyasova, I think is a kind of interesting under the radar prospect. If you're talking about guys who are stretch fours, who can fit alongside Hassan Whiteside, Irsan Ilyasova to me is kind of that guy. To me, what the Heat could really use is a Gordon Hayward type, if that makes sense. Somebody that could play a 3 or 4 position, handle the ball a little bit and make plays and just give Miami a little bit more ball handling along the perimeter.
Yeah.
And Irsan Ilyasova is not Gordon Hayward in that respect, but he's also not going to get paid as much as Gordon Hayward. He's not Chandler Parsons in that respect, but he's not going to get as paid as much as Parsons. Ilyasova to me can do some stuff with that. I mean, he's not going to lead a pick and roll attack, but he can at least get a screen set for him from Whiteside or another perimeter player and dribble around it and make something happen. He's a good 3-point shooter. Stan Van Gundy had him and entrusted him with some stretch 4 minutes and traded him only because he got, you know,
Tobias Harris.
He stole Tobias Harris from the Magic. So, for a cheaper player, Irsan Ilyasova could be a good fit.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was there when they got him in Orlando and, saw him play a little bit up close. And, he was one of Skiles' guys. He came up in Milwaukee when Skiles was the coach there. So he'd already played for him. And I think that was partly what Scott was trying to do in Orlando. And, you know,
clearly recreate the magic of that Bucks team.
Well, I think there's a lot of tension there. He's trying to get them to kind of lock in for the playoff hunt. And he thought by bringing in veterans like Ilyasova and Brandon Jennings that might happen. And, you know, he'd already traded away Tobias Harris traded twice by Scott Skiles during the course of his career, because they drafted him in Milwaukee and traded him to Orlando, and then he coached him in Orlando and traded him to Detroit. And apparently he did not want Tobias Harris playing for him, which is weird because he said afterward that on many occasions how much he loved him. But anyway, good fit, you know, good solid guy, can play some defense, get some rebounds in there. Yeah, I mean, I think certainly as a cheaper stretch four, he's a good option to come in there. Maybe he's not. He could play a little 4 and 5, and I think, like you said, he can stretch the floor at this point. So I think that's certainly that you'd like that versatility from coming off the bench.
Another guy that I'm interested in is Marvin Williams.
Ah.
Marvin Williams has been – basically everybody talks about Harrison Barnes as basically Marvin Williams, but better. So we can flip that the other way and say Marvin Williams is basically Harrison Barnes, just worse, but also way cheaper. I think after the year that he had compared to Deng and even Joe Johnson, I think Marvin Williams could be a little bit cheaper. And I think that
the playoffs didn't help him, that's for sure.
Right. And I think that with Nicholas Batum likely getting a max deal from Charlotte, he might be the odd man out there. I just don't think that they could afford to keep him, Batum and Jeremy Lin and all these guys. So he could be the odd man out there. And if he looks to take his talents elsewhere, the Heat are a good fit because this is what I wrote. Justice Winslow has been compared to Draymond Green for, you know, we could argue about the accuracy of that, but Justice Winslow did play center in game 7 of the second round playoff game. That's very Draymond Green-esque. There, if you can get a poor man's Golden State Warriors forward combination, that's not bad. That's, you know, the forward combination of a 73-win team that basically, if we talk about the Heat needing to find the glue guys to kind of get the wheels turning, that's basically what Golden State's forwards do for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and everybody else on that roster. As good as Draymond Green and Harrison Barnes are, not to call them glue guys, they're the ones that kind of get things whirring. And if Justice Winslow, your lottery pick, if you project him as a starter next year, which I think he could be that, a cool little combination of Marvin Williams, Justice Winslow, kind of that interchangeable forward group, you know, regardless of who the small forward and the power forward are nominally.
Yeah.
That to me is very intriguing, especially because Marvin Williams is a bona fide 3-point shooter.
You're leaving out the Chris Bosh guy, though.
I think, okay, that's true. I envision Chris Bosh as a center, but.
And then you're leaving out that Whiteside kid.
I still think that the best form of this team is Chris Bosh at center with Whiteside coming off the bench, but that's just me.
No, we talked about it last time.
Yeah.
And I think we're both in agreement with that. But
so
I
it's just us.
If you say game changer, control the team, lead by example, as you did, you know, as Pat Riley did, then I don't think you can throw $20 million at Whiteside and say, well, yeah, but you're still only going to play 32 minutes off the bench.
So Bosh may or may not be around next year. So Marvin Williams is, he could be two things. He could be an interesting player to pair along with Winslow and create that interchangeable forward combination if Bosh is able to play.
Can he play the three? Can he play the three if Bosh is back in the lineup?
I think that at this point, he's a four. I think he can play the three. He can. I just think he's been proven to be way, teams have tried that, and he's proven to be way more valuable as a stretch four. But he also, even like during the regular season when Bosh was around, Marvin Williams reminded me of a Bosh light a little bit. Like, he can do some of the similar things. He's a little bit more physical than people give him credit for. He's a better rim protector than people give him credit for. I think there was a point at the season where our friends over at Nylon Calculus had Marvin Williams as Charlotte's best rim protector. So
That says more about Charlotte's team than
that's true. But somebody had to be the best rim protector, and it was Marvin Williams.
But if they had said Jeremy Lin was the guy, I wouldn't have really thought too much about his ability to protect the rim either. That's just a team that doesn't have any rim protection whatsoever.
Either way, Marvin Williams he could be insurance if Bosh isn't able to play next year.
I think
that's important because McRoberts, we wanted him to be that, but he wasn't that.
I'm not as high on him as you are. Mm-hmm. I remember particularly during the midseason trade deadline, you were actively trying to, you know,
banging my hand on the table for Marvin Williams.
I liked what he did in Charlotte this year. You know, he's had an up and down career. He seemed like he was a little bit more stable. I think he's a good fit there if Steve Clifford can continue to get the most out of him. But the playoffs did not help as far as strengthen his credibility as a kind of player that you can count on in clutch situations. And I think that's what they're looking to do here. They're not looking to take a step back there. If you think about it from that perspective, you know, all things being equal as far as salary is concerned, based on your playoff performance and the kind of performance that they had during the second half of the year, who would you rather have on the team, Marvin Williams or Luol Deng? And I think Deng is a clear answer.
Right. I think that the other question is how much is Deng going to earn this offseason? The other guy that I want to talk about was Courtney Lee.
Ooh.
I think
another
that
Charlotte guy.
If another Charlotte guy, it's basically Charlotte and Magic players that I got on this list because they were both so good. Model franchises.
The Heat
are kind of where the Hornets were the last offseason, where they've got some good pieces. They've got, you know, they know who the stars of this team are. But we're really bad at 3-point shooting. We got to add some shooters. Courtney Lee is probably the best shooter on the market.
Yeah, but I mean, they traded away half their roster, though. I mean, they made major moves. I don't think that's the kind of overhaul that Miami's going to.
We only have six guys under contract.
Sure, but they're looking. I mean, I think Riley, again, you would think he would know what the plan is. He wants to keep the core intact. So
I don't know what the plan is. That's my problem.
Well, he's not going to tell you either. I think he even he quickly sidestepped that question. It's like, well, who are you looking to bring in? It's like, I'm not going to go into that. And then he kind of just, you know, downplayed and said, we've got a core, we've got a vision, and we're going to make that vision a reality. It's like, okay, that's all it is.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Dwayne Wade's Snapchat. Did you get a chance to see anything?
Wait! You're missing potentially the most exciting option of that 5-man group there, Dwayne Dedman.
I was gonna skip it because nobody wants to hear about Dwayne Dedman.
What? That guy was a beast. Look, first of all, covering the team.
There are times.
Hilarious.
Sorry, but there are times on TV where I thought he was Dwight Howard. I was like, did the Magic get him back?
Well, that might be a bit of a stretch.
But backup Magic center Dwayne Dedman. What were you gonna say?
No, he's you know, covering the team. He's very funny. Like, he's very personable, good guy. You know, kind of stashed on the bench for most of the year, and then when things, you know, completely fell apart and they were out of the playoff race for whatever reason, Skiles was starting him when Vucevic was hurt, and they were thriving with him out there. Just constant effort. I know part of that is probably, you know, a contract year and finally getting some consistent minutes, but man, he made the most of it. That's what you look for. At least that's what I look for. You know, a guy who gets an opportunity and makes the most of it, and that's what he did. You wonder why he didn't get it sooner, but there was so much going on there in Orlando with Scott Skiles in his first year that maybe he just didn't have a good grip on that roster and what he wanted to do with it. And, you know, clearly that's the case. I think Frank Vogel would love to have him back because, you know, he talked about speeding up the pace and having guys that can play defense and you know, a quick active team. He certainly fits the bill, but, you know, I would love to see him in Miami. I think we talked about this specifically. You know, you'd like to have had some height, some a backup player that could go in there and play when Whiteside went down so you don't have to shift to those kind of, you know, amorphous lineups. And, you know, Deadman would have been a great fit, I think, in those last few games of the season.
And you know, the juxtaposition of Toronto having Bismack Biyombo to go to and Valanciunas.
Well, future Hall of Famer Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah, I mean, who do you build your team around? If you had a choice, Durant, Steph Curry, Bismack Biyombo, right? Like, it's one of those three. I think, you know, that seeing that on the other end of the court is kind of an eye opener, just because that was that essentially decided the series, the backup center position, which is insane. I believe that decided the series. And having a guy like Dwayne Dedman, number one, he gives you a bona fide true center to bring off the bench and play in case Whiteside gets hurt. And if you're looking for value in free agency, I like to look at teams that were complete dumpster fires, you know, who didn't utilize their talent maybe the best way that they possibly could. I mean, Hassan Whiteside basically played for the Sacramento Kings, which was a complete dumpster fire when he was there, and then, you know, played with Memphis for a hot minute and, you know, toiled away over in Lebanon and in China and everything, and then eventually found his way back in the NBA because the Heat were smart enough to go grab him. But, you know, there's stories like that all over the NBA where guys are just underutilized in one place, and then they are finally brought onto a good team that knows what it is that they're doing, and then they thrive suddenly. And Dwayne Dedman, to me, seems like that kind of guy. And he's a free agent. He's played well enough to get some looks in free agency. I don't see why he goes back to Orlando at this point, because they're in transition yet again, and he could maybe find his way to a better roster. And I think that the Heat could really use him. If you look for the next Bismack Biyombo, or even like the next Ian Mahimi, you know, from Indiana, just like kind of these centers who played well in their time, Dwayne Dedman is kind of one of those guys. So, yeah, that's why I wrote about him. I like him a lot. Just as one of those other guys to kind of fill out the roster. I mean, the Heat are going to have to do that. You know, whale or no whale, they're going to have other roster spots to fill. Anyway, now's as good a time as any to start talking about Gabriel Union and Dwayne Wade's little vacation on Snapchat.
Well, I didn't see it, so you're going to have to tell me all about it.
Okay, so I think it was Saturday morning. I log on to Snapchat as I do. It's usually third in my rotation. It's Twitter, Instagram, and then Snapchat.
Okay.
I get on Snapchat, and I see Dwayne Wade's got an update. And I'm like, that's interesting. Dwayne Wade hasn't had a new story in quite a long time. Basically, he took the playoffs and the season off, essentially. So I log on, and there's Dwayne Wade, chilling out in what looked like the Bahamas. It turned out it was just Miami. Just chilling out with Gabriel Union on the couch, outdoors somewhere. Talking about how he doesn't have anything to say, but he wanted to return to Snapchat. And that launched basically his entire day on Snapchat. He started it with saying, I have nothing to say. I don't know what to say. I just wanted to get back on here. And for the rest of the day, I just followed along with Dwayne Wade. And it was the most magical experience I've ever had on Snapchat. I mean, it beat anything that Hassan Whiteside's done, whether or not he's making real iguanas kill fake iguanas, or I don't know if you saw that one.
No, I did not. Whoa. You're gonna have to break that one down for us. You know?
I don't know if it was his video or what, but there was a video from Hassan Whiteside about a real iguana attacking a iguana doll, like a stuffed animal.
Oh, okay.
And he was like, the reals live while the fakes get exposed.
Oh, okay. Was he
it's
trying
badass.
To make them
Between
work?
That and the Call of Duty on Snapchat, I don't know how you question if Whiteside has a killer instinct.
Well, it's because he didn't he spend like a 30-second window there like making sweet, sweet love to a cake or a piece of cake or something like that. They
velvet,
call it.
yeah, I mean, he looked like he was like on Molly talking about this red velvet cake that his chef
They didn't call it
cooked for
church, right? Is it like take me to church or something
him.
like
Yeah,
that?
take me to church. And then he's got this other thing, like another line from him, ain't no computer defense or something like that, about he plays 2K against computer defense and dominates it.
All right.
So Whiteside's an interesting follow, but back to Dwayne Wade, because this was thrilling. So we start with Dwayne Wade talking trash about Gabrielle Union, and Dwayne Wade's knowledge about how you can't know if you're soulmates with somebody until you go kayaking with each other. Nice little knowledge bomb there. Important information postseason. You know, because making fun of Gabrielle Union, like just saying like, hey, you're going the wrong way, you're not paddling hard enough, I'm doing all the work. And then he was like, I was just about to go just jump off the boat and swim back to shore. That was it. It was great. Like, these are human moments that we don't see from Dwayne Wade. And then so a few things go by, and next thing you know, we're at the bar with Dwayne Wade. I'm lifelong dream of mine. So and he's taking tequila shots. He's like, hey, we're doing a tequila taste test with shots, and you just see Dwayne Wade just taking shots of tequila, not handling it well. He doesn't seem to, he's got the major tequila face afterwards, biting on a lime. But he's doing shots, and now we're doing shots with Dwayne Wade. And you just go through the whole day with him, and finally it's at night. Dwayne Wade, pitch dark. I think it's like 1 a.m. Eastern time, I think. It's him, Gabrielle Union, and the two kids. And he's just on the grill. He's drunk at this point. Like, you can visibly tell that, just like I get when I'm drunk, that I just want to start grilling stuff and light fires. That's the way Dwayne Wade gets, and that's why we need to be best friends. He's got this great grill set up. Like, just like, you just tell, state-of-the-art stainless steel grill. Lights it up, starts grilling chicken and what looked like skirt steaks and stuff like that. And he's just having a good time. He's dancing with Gabrielle Union and his kids. They're just blasting this Marshall amp that they turned into a boombox. It's just a great time. And I just followed along all Saturday just with Dwayne Wade and his kids and Gabrielle Union. It was amazing. So that's my spiel. I don't know how we talk about that, but it's just great.
I
saw
don't
Dwayne
know
Wade
what to
taking
say.
Shots.
I mean, look, it's always good when you can get that kind of, like, personal view of a player, I guess. It's, you know, I guess that's how things have changed dramatically. When you think back to 10 years ago, you certainly didn't have that kind of insight. Further back, I mean, you know, you had no way of knowing what players, I don't think people cared about what players thought or did or how they lived outside of what they did on the field or the court. So, you know, things clearly have changed over the years. And it's, I mean, look, he's human, and it's great to see that side of him, you know, that he's having a good time with family, that he can know how to relax. He seems like he's at peace and he's at ease with himself, mm-hmm. and he's enjoying himself. That's great, man. I love it. I didn't see it, but from everything, the way you described it, probably, you know, you probably took shots right along with him. And, it made you happy.
I don't even need to see him. I just assume Dwayne Wade's doing shots, and I just do shots. Well, this is for
lighting
you,
a fire in your living room and you know, grilling things, quote unquote grilling things, and taking shots. I mean, you were, until the police came, you were having one of the best nights of your life.
They're like, what are you doing? Just partying with Dwayne Wade, man.
Yeah, you shot on the Snapchat, they're like, holy shit. I mean, this is it. This is the kind of fun times we want to have too. They quit their jobs in the forest. It's a great moment. It's, you know, it's sports bringing people together.
I forgot my favorite part of the whole Snapchat experience.
There's more.
He's talking about how Dwayne Wade was talking about how he and Gabrielle Union make friends when they're like out and like on vacation. And he was talking about like what basically everybody and their friends do with each other. Like, you go to a bar with your wingman, you go to a bar with your significant other, or you literally go anywhere with somebody, like another friend of yours. And you immediately say, who are we going to talk to? And you start judging literally everybody in that room. And he was talking about how him and Gabrielle Union, they just judge everybody.
Wow.
In the area. And they're like, who do we want to be friends with? Which one, there is a chance that if you're in the same room with Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union, that they might decide that you're the one that they want to be friends with. That's pretty cool. Number two.
Do they actually go up to these people, though? Once they start judging them.
He said that basically he's like, most people I'm not sure about, so that's why Gabrielle and I always end up being friends with the bartender, because those are who you really want to be friends with anyway.
Yeah.
And that's basically what I do. So.
Right. But my reason's probably much like yours, is so that they can give me free drinks and not throw me out at the end of the night.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. That's probably not what happens with Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union.
Either way,
everybody's throwing out D Wade.
Doesn't matter. They did the same. That was my favorite moment. Oh, that and real talk about kayaks. As a kayak owner myself, I appreciated it.
I didn't know you were a kayak owner. I can't picture you in a Bay Area go kayaking out there.
Yeah, they have lakes and stuff.
No, a lot of places have lakes. That's great, man. I'm really happy for you.
Yeah, I've done it like 3 times. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know why I bought the kayak. I just, I was like, before I've ever been kayaking, I just bought it. And I was like, I'm going to do this.
You got to go strap on the old GoPro and go out there and show us what you got.
That's next on the heat check.
That will probably be the most listened / watched podcast of all time.
Video I feel podcast.
Pretty confident of that. Absolutely.
I'll be doing shots too, just like Dwayne Wade. I'll Snapchat everything.
Yeah, kayaking on alcohol sounds like a good combination.
It's a lot of fun.
I can imagine.
All right. That's as good a time as any to end the podcast. We'll be back next time with more kayak talk.
Alcohol. More alcohol, more Snapchat, and much more of Wes's kayaking adventures.
And maybe some basketball talk in the middle of it.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Heat Check podcast. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and Blog Talk Radio. We're part of the Hardwood Proxies and Basketball Podcast Network over there. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.